Thanks for downloading the Wave Church podcast. We hope this message inspires and brings you into a deeper relationship with God. Enjoy the message.
Pastor Steve, Pastor Sharon, Josh, and Alyssa, and you know, there's one less than favorite son as well as what you told me earlier, Josh, who you purposefully didn't give him the memo to be here tonight, but yeah. We do have a photo.
We did bring a photo of Sam tonight that we're going to put on the coffee table.
Yeah, just there you go right there. So we do have that for Sam.
Yep.
You know, Sam is representing.
Yes, if you have a lighter, you can just go ahead or, you know, light that in his honor or pour a little drink out on his behalf here. But
we need to get a close-up on the camera.
Yeah, can we get that right
Let's
there?
Let's get that on the screen because...
It's a terrible photo. We just want to highlight
Sam,
that.
Sam could never...
There he is. Oh. There he is.
There it is. Sam's greatest weakness was he never smiled in a photo, did he?
He hated it.
He hated photos.
But if that's your greatest weakness in life, I feel like you're doing pretty good. Because I got a lot of weaknesses worse than that. And I'm also still not smiling in photos. So that's a 1-2 hit for me right there. But we actually had an entire series of questions that are put together by our team, many of our key volunteers in the church, that we wanted to have the opportunity to ask the Kelly family this evening as we continue our conversation on family life. Because way better than theory is actual application in living it out. And I don't know about you, but over the years, there have been many times where just watching from a distance how this family has navigated many different seasons, it's helped my own family in some of our seasons as well. And so we're going to try to glean that knowledge, and hopefully for everyone here and everyone joining us online, something resonates with the season that you may or may not be in. Or it could be a friend. You know, everyone has that friend that they ask questions for. So, you know, buckle up right there. Maybe you can help your friend here tonight. So someone asked, one of the questions we saw more than all the others, honestly, was how did you help, and I guess this is a question from Pastor Steve and Sharon, how did you help your kids establish healthy boundaries with friendships and with dating?
Oh. Wow. You can go first, darling.
You know, I think the conversation started when they were little kids, you know what I mean? Not that we would sit down and talk with them, but it's, you know, kids, you know, they start kindergarten and they kind of have a crush on someone, you know what I mean? Like they, and so it's just a conversation where you're just creating healthy, I guess, ideas and conversation about... Yeah, one day you will be a little bit older and you will like someone and you will want to date them. And the conversation in our home, and I guess you guys can jump in, was we kind of steered them away from dating in high school. Now, I don't think you can necessarily mandate that necessarily, but we kind of encouraged them. They were pretty busy. What are you laughing at?
Alyssa was reminding me that I did not listen to that wisdom in high school.
I did, and it worked out for me.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
How'd it work out for you, Josh?
It worked out now. I got the most beautiful, bodacious wife on planet Earth. Can I get an amen? Just had to learn some lessons along the way.
I know. The thing is, it's, you know, it's a conversation that as moms and dads, it's got to be happening in your home. And, you know, like Josh said, you know, he wanted to date in his senior year and we were like, okay, if that's what you want to do, great. But he realized shortly after that it probably wasn't what was, it just wasn't a good thing for him, ultimately.
Yeah, I found out I was not ready to date.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly.
I was still a boy trying to be a man.
Boy trying to be a man. But again, it's just conversations that we had as you guys were growing up, only because, you know, middle school, high school, there's just so much drama. And I think if you can talk to a young person about that, look, I remember, I think the big thing is for parents too is remember when you were that age. You know, when I think back to being a middle schooler, I was just awful. I was a horrible middle school child. I remember that. And I think we forget often. We think that, I didn't do that when I was a middle schooler. Well, hang on a minute. Just think about that for a minute. Because we've all walked this path and we've all crashed and burned at some stage or another and made some decisions that weren't great. And I think that's an important thing to talk to your young person about. Again, age-appropriate stuff, but really being honest and open in the conversation. Ultimately, you want them to date a person they could potentially marry. And so that's... why, you know, and we weren't laying that heavy on them, but that ultimately was kind of the basis for our conversation.
were some of those boundaries and things that you taught? I mean, you had two sons and a daughter. How did those conversations defer at all? Because obviously there could be, there are different angles.
And in the house,
Pastor Steve, Pastor Sharon, Josh, and Alyssa. And, you know, there's one less than favorite son as well as what you told me earlier, Josh, who you purposefully didn't give him the memo to be here tonight, but yeah. We do have a photo.
We did bring a photo of Sam tonight that we're going to put on the coffee table.
Yeah, just there so you go right there. So we do have that for Sam.
Yep.
You know,
Sam is representing.
Yes, if you have a lighter, you can just go ahead or, you know, light that in his honor or pour a little drink out on his behalf here. But
we need to get a close-up on the camera.
Yeah, can we get that right
Let's
there?
Let's get that on the screen because...
It's a terrible photo. We just want to highlight
Sam,
that.
Sam could never...
There he is.
Oh.
There he is.
There it is. Sam's greatest weakness was he never smiled in a photo, did he?
He hated it. Yeah,
he hated photos.
But if that's your greatest weakness in life, I feel like you're doing pretty good. Because I got a lot of weaknesses worse than that. And I'm also still not smiling in photos. So that's a 1-2 hit for me right there. But we actually had an entire series of questions that are put together by our team, many of our key volunteers in the church, that we wanted to have the opportunity to ask the Kelly family this evening as we continue our conversation on family life. Because way better than theory is actual application in living it out. And I don't know about you, but over the years, there have been many times where just watching from a distance how this family has navigated many different seasons, it's helped my own family in some of our seasons as well. And so we're going to try to glean that knowledge, and hopefully for everyone here and everyone joining us online, something resonates with the season that you may or may not be in. Or it could be a friend. You know, everyone has that friend that they ask questions for. So, right. You know, buckle up right there. Maybe you can help your friend here tonight. So someone asked, one of the questions we saw more than all the others, honestly, was how did you help, and I guess this is a question from Pastor Steve and Sharon, how did you help your kids establish healthy boundaries with friendships and with dating?
Oh. Wow. You can go first, darling.
You know, I think the conversation started when they were little kids, you know what I mean? Not that we would sit down and talk with them, but it's, you know, kids, you know, they start kindergarten and they kind of have a crush on someone, you know what I mean? Like and so it's just a conversation where you're just creating healthy, I guess, ideas and conversation about... Yeah, one day you will be a little bit older and you will like someone and you will want to date them. And the conversation in our home, and I guess you guys can jump in, was we kind of steered them away from dating in high school. Now, I don't think you can necessarily mandate that necessarily, but we kind of encouraged them. They were pretty busy. What are you laughing at?
Alyssa was reminding me that I did not listen to that wisdom in high school.
I did, and it worked out for me.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
How'd it work out for you, Josh?
It worked out now. I got the most beautiful, bodacious wife on planet Earth. Can I get an amen? Just had to learn some lessons along the way.
I know. The thing is, it's, you know, it's a conversation that as moms and dads, it's got to be happening in your home. And, you know, like Josh said, you know, he wanted to date in his senior year and we were like, okay, if that's what you want to do, great. But he realized shortly after that it probably wasn't what was, it just wasn't a good thing for him, ultimately.
Yeah, I found out I was not ready to date.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly.
I was still a boy trying to be a man.
Boy trying to be a man. But again, it's just conversations that we had as you guys were growing up, only because, you know, middle school, high school, there's just so much drama. And I think if you can talk to a young person about that, look, I remember, I think the big thing is for parents too is remember when you were that age. You know, when I think back to being a middle schooler, I was just awful. I was a horrible middle school child. I remember that. And I think we forget often. We think that, I didn't do that when I was a middle schooler. Well, hang on a minute, just think about that for a minute. Because we've all walked this path and we've all crashed and burned at some stage or another and made some decisions that weren't great. And I think that's an important thing to talk to your young person about. Again, age-appropriate stuff, but really being honest and open in the conversation. Ultimately, you want them to date a person they could potentially marry. And so that's... why, you know, and we weren't laying that heavy on them, but that ultimately was kind of the basis for our conversation.
were some of those boundaries and things that you taught? I mean, you had two sons and a daughter. How did those conversations differ at all? Because obviously there could be, there are different angles in which they're approaching those conversations in a lot of ways. Were there some ways in terms of some of the boundaries with friendships and things that were different for them because they were guys versus different for Alyssa because she was a girl? I know, for instance, you had the rule for Alyssa on her fuel tank. I never heard about that rule existing for Josh. Maybe it did. But, you know, there are different rules and boundaries for this is what wise living is like. Were there a lot of examples like that, or was it largely in part same?
I think we just had principles to live by because they're Christians. It's not about boy or girl. Now, that gas tank thing was, I didn't want Alyssa driving around and running out of gas sometime late at night. So I said to her, driving's a privilege, and you're not allowed to get your gas tank below half empty. Because I didn't ever want her running out of gas in the middle of the night somewhere, or even, frankly, gassing up in a gas station late at night because she's a girl by herself. So that was Josh, I couldn't care less. He can run out of gas anywhere. So there was that. But the other thing is, he can handle himself. So I do think that's a dad thinking protectively toward their daughter to avoid any unnecessary situation that is avoidable. And I think you pretty well did that, didn't you, sweetie? You probably don't do it anymore. Now, we did have some boundaries. For instance, we taught our kids, it's not even an option. You're not dating someone who's not a Christian.
Right.
Because the Bible says don't be unequally yoked. And actually, the girl that Josh is referring to actually used to pursue Josh, and she wasn't a Christian. And Josh kind of liked her, and he kind of liked the fact that someone liked him. And then finally...
It never happened before. Oh, my gosh.
But we talked about it, didn't we? And Josh just finally said to this girl, listen, I like you, but you're not a Christian. So blow me down if she didn't come to church and genuinely give her life to Jesus. And then Josh goes, I said, well, just give her some time. Let's just make sure she loves God more than she is interested in you. And he did. And then finally I met this young girl and I said, she's cute, she's beautiful. And it's not rules like, no, you won't. Okay, Josh, if you think you're ready, go for it. But the thing is, he listened. He actually allowed us to weigh in. We were still the parent in helping him make decisions in those days. But you don't actually make those sorts of wisdom principles to live by unless there's a strong relationship and trust. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I remember my mother, she was told by a Bible study group leader that if her children go to church, she should punish them by spanking them. And so my mother tried that on my sister, and my sister slapped my mother back and then left the house and said, you will not make me go to church. And my sister moved out of home. See, the thing is, that Bible study leader was just putting in rules and thinking that there was deposits and relationship, and it wasn't there. So sometimes you get well-meaning advice from people, but you got to put it in the context of where it's all working.
Yeah. I would also say too, I think I've had people say to me, don't you think it's easier raising boys as opposed to girls, and especially when they're dating? But honestly, boys get their heart broken too.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that I would say I was probably a hovering parent. Because you don't want to be that control freak mother, although it's, you know, sometimes it's like, you know. But I would just be hovering in the background, just kind of trying to watch what was going on. And I would have conversations with the boys, such as respecting the girls that they are dating, and you will not break her heart. And if you don't want to date her anymore, let's talk about what that conversation would look like and where it happens. We're not going to text them to say we're not dating anymore. We're going to have a conversation with them. So I think, too, just the rules of engagement, you know, what will this look like, you know, moving forward?
And I think, too, let me just say this. I think, like, when Jared wanted to date Alyssa, Alyssa came to me and says, hey, Dad, there's this guy that wants to date me. And I said, well, what do you want? She goes, well, I kind of like him. So she already had my blessing. I didn't make it easy for Jared, I promise you. And he was standing in a line to meet me. There was a line of people wanting to say hi to me. And I saw him, and I made him just wait and get on the end of the line. And I knew what he was going to ask me to do was, could he meet with me to ask permission permission to date my daughter. And because Alyssa told him, if you want to date me, you need to talk to my dad and get his permission, which I thought was good. And so Jared finally gets to the line and he goes, Pastor Steve, I'd love to have a chance to maybe get a coffee with you. I said, sure, no problem, mate. I'm going to Australia for 3 weeks. I'll see you when I get back. And I made him wait for 3 weeks because I knew. But you know what?
Which they're approaching those conversations in a lot of ways. Were there some ways in terms of some of the boundaries with friendships and things that were different for them because they were guys versus different for Alyssa because she was a girl? I know, for instance, you had the rule for Alyssa on her fuel tank. I never heard about that rule existing for Josh. Maybe it did. But, you know, there are different rules and boundaries for this is what wise living is like. Were there a lot of examples like that, or was it largely in part same?
I think we just had principles to live by because they're Christians. It's not about boy or girl. Now, that gas tank thing was, I didn't want Alyssa driving around and running out of gas sometime late at night. So I said to her, driving's a privilege, and you're not allowed to get your gas tank below half empty. Because I didn't ever want her running out of gas in the middle of the night somewhere, or even, frankly, gassing up in a gas station late at night because she's a girl by herself. So that was Josh, I couldn't care less. He can run out of gas anywhere. So there was that. But the other thing is, he can handle himself. So I do think that's a dad thinking protectively toward their daughter to avoid any unnecessary situation that is avoidable. And I think you pretty well did that, didn't you, sweetie? You probably don't do it anymore. Now, we did have some boundaries. For instance, we taught our kids, it's not even an option. You're not dating someone who's not a Christian.
Right.
Because the Bible says don't be unequally yoked. And actually, the girl that Josh is referring to actually used to pursue Josh, and she wasn't a Christian. And Josh kind of liked her, and he kind of liked the fact that someone liked him. And then finally...
That never happened before. Oh, my gosh.
But we talked about it, didn't we? And Josh just finally said to this girl, listen, I like you, but you're not a Christian. So blow me down if she didn't come to church and genuinely give her life to Jesus. And then Josh goes, I said, well, just give her some time. Let's just make sure she loves God more than she is interested in you. And he did. And then finally, I met this young girl and I said, she's cute. She's beautiful. And it's not rules like, no, you won't. Okay, Josh, if you think you're ready, go for it. But the thing is, he listened. He actually allowed us to weigh in. We were still the parent in helping him make decisions in those days. But you don't actually make those sorts of wisdom principles to live by unless there's a strong relationship and trust. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I remember my mother, she was told by a Bible study group leader that if her children go to church, she should punish them by spanking them. And so my mother tried that on my sister, and my sister slapped my mother back and then left the house and said, you will not make me go to church. And my sister moved out of home. See, the thing is, that Bible study leader was just putting in rules and thinking that there was deposits and relationship, and it wasn't there. So sometimes you get well-meaning advice from people, but you got to put it in the context of where it's all working.
Yeah. I would also say too, I think I've had people say to me, don't you think it's easier raising boys as opposed to girls, and especially when they're dating? But honestly, boys get their heart broken too.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that I would say I was probably a hovering parent. Because you don't want to be that control freak mother, although it's, you know, sometimes it's like, you know. But I would just be hovering in the background, just kind of trying to watch what was going on. And I would have conversations with the boys, such as respecting the girls that they are dating, and you will not break her heart. And if you don't want to date her anymore, let's talk about what that conversation would look like and where it happens. We're not going to text them to say we're not dating anymore. We're going to have a conversation with them. So I think, too, just the rules of engagement. You know, what will this look like, you know, moving forward?
And I think too, let me just say this. I think like when Jared wanted to date Alyssa came to me and says, hey, Dad, there's this guy that wants to date me. And I said, well, what do you want? She goes, well, I kind of like him. So she already had my blessing. I didn't make it easy for Jared, I promise you. And he was standing in a line to meet me. There was a line of people wanting to say hi to me. And I saw him and I made him just wait and get on the end of the line. And I knew what he was going to ask me to do was, could he meet with me to ask permission to date my daughter? And because Alyssa told him, if you want to date me, you need to talk to my dad and get his permission, which I thought was good. And so Jared finally gets to the line and he goes, Pastor Steve, I'd love to have a chance to maybe get a coffee with you. I said, sure, no problem, mate. I'm going to Australia for 3 weeks. I'll see you when I get back. And I made him wait for 3 weeks because I knew. But you know what? You know, Jacob waited 7 years. You can't wait 3 weeks. And that was bad. The other thing is, I loved it when I was watching Josh with Brooke because Brooke was brilliant. She played hard to get. And Brooke actually really liked Josh, I found out, but she would talk to Alyssa, and she, because Alyssa was her community group leader.
Yeah,
and
that was fun.
And what did you tell Brooke, Alyssa?
What did I tell Brooke?
Yeah.
That your brother is the most amazing catch on planet Earth and don't waste any time.
No, I think... No, I know for sure I didn't say that. I can't remember. I think you told me that you liked Brooke, or Brooke told me that you liked Josh, and Josh asked me, does Brooke like me? And I...
No, you asked me, do I still like Brooke? And I was like, you know I love this woman.
Oh, yeah.
I have a shrine in my closet dedicated to her.
I can't remember. Anyway, I told him that no, she didn't, so he had to keep going.
But what I was going to say was, see what the relationship was. Brooke, community group leader, Alyssa, community group leader, talking to Alyssa, hey, I like your brother. What do you think? And I remember Alyssa's going, are you sure?
I know. I tried to talk her out of it, I'm pretty sure.
I didn't want to say that.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
So there you go. So I want you to see the family dynamic. Yeah. It's like we're looking out for each other. Yeah. We want the best for each other.
Looking out for each
Not
other.
Really.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's how I knew Brooke was the one, because Josh needed to chase someone. And I went, yeah, she's the girl.
Yeah. I think with all this stuff, like dating and boundaries, what really helped me is, like, Mom and Dad, they talked to us about this long before we were ever dating. And so there was honest, I knew that I could talk to Mom and Dad about anything, no matter what it was. And I think what helped with that is they were initiating conversations, you know, with us growing up long before those moments were happening. So it wasn't like they waited till that moment happened and now we're trying to have this awkward conversation. And I think they also knew, like, what saved me in middle school, high school, because there's a pressure to date because everybody's dating. And I think for me, being in a community group, I know we talk about this all the time, but it really saved me, is being in a community group where I had a community group leader who was willing to have tough conversations with me. And my parents knew that those conversations were happening. And I had friends in my world who were Christians, who loved Jesus. And so I didn't feel like I needed to fall into the pressure of doing what everybody else was doing. And that's where community group for young people, no matter what age you are, is so, so important. And my parents knew, I mean, we talked about the boundaries that we'd have in dating. And they knew that I was accountable with somebody, and we were actually implementing those boundaries. And I remember, even while Brooke and I were dating, some people were even made fun of some of the boundaries we had. You know, even some people like to bring up, oh, it's Wave Church boundaries. But all boundaries do is set us up to do this relationship in the way God set it up to be, in freedom.
Yeah.
It keeps us in freedom. And I remember on my wedding day watching my pure bride walk down the aisle, and I'm like, you can make fun of our boundaries all you want. Man, this moment right here is everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's awesome. That is awesome. So much wisdom in all that. I think another question, though, that regularly came up is, what do you do to keep marriage exciting? What do you do to keep it fun? What do you do to keep marriage from just feeling like Groundhog Day? You know, just repeat, wash, rinse, repeat, wash, rinse, repeat. But the adventure continues on in every season.
I think it's really important to keep spontaneity. I really do. I think it's important. There are some things, some hobbies that I have that, thank God, Sharon isn't this, you know, stay at home, go nowhere, do nothing. Sharon is releasing and she realizes how I bring energy and fun and life to the family is to have healthy outlets and healthy hobbies. And so that was important to me, that actually, and you know, for Josh, it was like, He loved to golf, so did Sam. Thank God, because I loved to golf. So we were golfing on a golf course together. Alyssa, ever since she was 4 years of age, I dated her once a month, and we had so much fun doing all that. And then Josh used to always say, matter of fact, Sam did this week, you know, Sam goes, Mum, you know, Dad dated Alyssa. And he goes, you were going to buy me a ring and we were going to have this agreement about. And he goes, you never did buy me. And he's still asking his mother for that ring this week in Texas.
So he can sell it on eBay and make money, probably.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But I think, too, you know, one of the greatest tools to have a great marriage is to have a great friendship. And I think when you think about the friends that you hang out with, why do you hang out with them? Because you just like being with them and you like doing things with them. And I think for Steve and I, we've worked really hard at being really good friends. That doesn't mean there's seasons where it's not harder than others. But because the basis of our marriage is we really do love and like each other and we're committed to each other. And so we enjoy a lot of the same, even though we're very, very different. And most married couples will say, gosh, we're so opposite. Yeah, but that's what kind of makes you work so well too. But we enjoy being together and we enjoy doing things together. And I think that's really, really important. You know, sometimes as time goes by, especially when you've got kids in a home and it's so busy, you know, that's why date night is so important. It's just that reconnection of this friendship. But beyond that, that intimacy that is so vital for a healthy and wonderful marriage relationship. And I think if you are committed to doing that, what you don't want is to fall out of friendship or fall out of conversation, you know, because walls go up and then it just feels like we knew we were opposite, but now we feel like there's no, we don't even have a common ground to talk about. And I think that's so important for every married couple, those conversations that have to take place, the laughter that has to take place, that's so necessary.
And to make, should I just say this? I think what's really important in that context is this. For Sharon and I, we always made sure that we taught them that, you know, when we would be together as a family, when we were having fun together, there'd be moments when I would literally stop and capture the moment. And I would say something. I go, hey, kids, this is what life is all about. And they'd look at me and I go, life is all about the family together. And we created family moments. We enjoyed those moments. We were very intentional to have those things. Even to this day, there's songs that will, like one time I was driving in Arizona, I got hopelessly lost.
One time.
And this is in Arizona. And I got hopelessly lost and I was creating all this unnecessary tension and everybody was sitting there like, ah, because I was getting frustrated because I was late for a board meeting that I was a part of and I couldn't get there. And so Sam just starts singing, what was the song, Josh?
Vague Directions.
How does it go?
We don't really know where we're going, but we're going somewhere.
We've got vague directions.
And they kept singing that. And finally, I just had to burst out laughing. I went, I'm just being an idiot. And they're just making fun and putting fun back into it. So when you ask the question about, you know, how do you keep life and fun in the marriage, I think it's those things. Letting your kids laugh with you and laugh at you, capturing moments and saying, hey, guys, let's enjoy this. One of the things we were very good at, and we still are, is family vacations.
That's awesome. I mean, well, with those family vacations, I mean, what does that look like? Where do you think oftentimes families go wrong with those vacations? Is it just too starchy, doesn't happen enough? Do you think people feel like it's got to be big or I don't do anything? And it's like, no, just what do you think helped make that such a strong point for the family? Because I know I grew up in a family where we did not do it regularly. Right. And just seeing you guys regularly do it was awesome. But I think our family fell in the trap of, if it can't be this bigger than Ben-Hur moment, well, we just won't do anything.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be at all.
Right.
I mean, it's just a moment where you as a family, and to be honest with you, as our kids got older, they could invite a friend with them, you know? So it wasn't just our family. We included their friends in that. So it would be great and fun for everyone. So I think it's a mistake to think it has to be this or that. At the end of the day, you know, when you are raising a family, your end in mind is, I want to not just love these people, but like them in the future. So building relationship is so important. And those moments, those vacation moments, are opportunities where that can really happen.
And you get to know who their friends are.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? You get to know who, and we actually were even involved with that as much as we could in helping them choose healthy friends and just talking about that. And maybe some of their friends who were going through some real broken moments where we were able to help them process that for their friends. And so that was really important to us.
That's awesome. In the home life, how did you guys model a healthy spiritual walk in a way that for them it felt like this was genuinely who you were, not just who you were at church? What did that look like?
Well, I prayed in tongues every day around the house and laid hands on them and they fell under the power of God. And actually, to be honest with you, I think we were very supernatural. Supernatural. We weren't trying to be super spiritual. We were just trying to be genuinely who we are, not trying to put on a front, not trying to live up to. We used to say to our kids, listen, I love you no matter what you do, but I want other people to love you as well. So I'm going to discipline you. And so to me, it's like, you know, there's times when I'd correct a behavior or correct an attitude in them that I didn't like, that I didn't think was healthy. So to me, that's important. I don't think we ever, I mean, we seek grace occasionally.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is it's who we are. You know what I mean? Like when you are a Christian, it's Christ in you. And let's live this out in our day-to-day life. You know, it's talking about our quiet times, but not every day. And some people do. They sit around. And I commend families who do sit around and read the word together as a family. I think that is awesome. Mm. We didn't do that. Sorry, guys. We didn't do that.
Yeah, I kind of found you there.
You know, but I think we, with church, we always talked about church in a positive light and how great church was and how important it is to love the church and serve Jesus with everything in us and love the church. I think there were the conversations that we had. I mean, you guys can pipe in a little bit more.
Yeah, I think especially when it comes to family, the spirituality side, a lot of it is caught, not necessarily taught. And so what we would catch from them was just an authenticity. We knew that the people who they were in church and the people that they were on the platform is exactly how they were at home. So for us, there was a security that came in that was like, I aspire to be like that. I want to be someone who is the same wherever I go. And so, yeah, we didn't have moments of Bible studies, and quite honestly, I'm grateful for that. So thanks for not making us all do that together. Because we probably, that would have been fun, right? Yeah.
You've always struggled with reading, haven't you?
I have struggled, yes. But yeah, I think a lot of it for us as kids was actually caught from the spirit of who they were. It wasn't necessarily taught to us of different things, and in that they were very heavily involved in our lives, so they knew what was going on all the time and were able to speak, you know, spiritually into our lives, and you know, so yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm going to repeat what Alyssa just said, but it was authentic and it was real. I think if mom or dad tried to force any of that or they were different at all off the stage, I would have ran a mile. And I think what was most important to me is that I had a mom and dad who weren't perfect, but they were authentic. And they lived this Christian life authentically. And for me, that's the most spiritual thing. That is the most, because here's the thing. That only motivated me to want to know Jesus more, because I'm watching a life that is exampled. And so, you know, I'd much rather authentic, real mom and dad who, you know, were in church and came to my soccer games and have a 6 a.m. Bible study. I think that spiritually is what motivated me more than anything.
We probably should have had the Bible study as well. But here's what the other thing I would add to that is this. You know, I'd say, look, you're our kids and you have permission to be just like any other young person. You're not pastor's kids. And the other thing I do is I'd always be intentional about sharing about miracles and breakthroughs and the power of God and keep them excited about church and keep them excited about their love for God. And if that's not working in me and that's not working in Sharon, it will never work in your children. And so when you're looking at your children, you got to realize it's what's flowing out of you. And I think that's really important.
Sorry, one more thing, if I can add to it, is just them modeling how to you know, do life well. And in that, just when you were talking, it made me think of when we first moved here, I had like no friends because I moved from another country. And so I had a few friends at school, but not necessarily any friends at church at the time. And so, you know, I remember...
That's because there was no young people in our
youth group. Right, right, right. And so I remember us having the conversation about it and, you know, just me being a little upset that I don't have any friends. And I will never forget that their response was, well, let's pray them in. Let's pray in families that have kids that are your age. And like, you know, God who always comes through, we began to pray for it. And sure enough, families began to come that had great kids that were my age, and me as a child seeing firsthand God answering my prayer and caring about me meant more than anything.
That's cool. I love that.
Here's a great question. In a tech-driven society, how do we better balance family time or marriage life with social media, electronic devices, video games, etc.?
Ban them. I would love. I tell you something. I am so concerned about how addicted people are and disconnected people are from face-to-face conversation. And you know what walks in the mother runs in the family. And Sharon is probably the most addicted person in the world. Now, it's a great key. It really is. It's awesome. But even with Sharon and I said, honey, I just think, honestly, you need to get off your iPad occasionally. And so, and honestly, this is a serious issue for us, wasn't it? I said, yes. We're going to ban the iPad from the bedroom.
Right.
Because I'd wake up at 2 in the morning and there's a glow in the room. And it's her on her iPad.
I couldn't sleep, so I was just researching, you know.
Yeah, so I have no authority on this subject.
What are you researching at 2 a.m.? I'm just curious.
I don't know. I just think of things. I'm like, oh, I wonder what they're doing or what, you know, like not stalking people, but I'd have a random thought and I'd be like, oh. I love Google. Yeah.
Anybody who knows Sharon knows she's the Google queen, and it's all good. It's all fun. The only thing I will say is I've often sat in a restaurant, watched a whole family sit there and not talk to each other, and they're on the phones. There could be nothing more unhealthy to teach people social interaction. I think it's one of the rudest things in the world is when you're actually with somebody and you're on your phone. I actually think you put your phone down, you look at the person, and you talk to the person.
Yeah.
I'll just add in a youth context. Thanks, Alyssa. Full ride academic scholarship. Thank you, Alyssa. Not me.
Alyssa went. They know.
Yeah. I found more and more with young people, and as you know, we were pastoring young people. Is young people were so good at texting about these issues and things, but the moment we wanted to talk about it face to face, they were unable to have the conversation. And that's something that I found even more and more now is, and we need to be able to have these conversations face to face, not just through texting. So anyway.
That's good. I just think parents watch what, you know, with young people, look at what they're on, look at the websites. Yeah. We had computers in our house, but they were never allowed to have passwords that we didn't know, and we didn't have open access to their internet. And, you know, for the longest time, there was no TVs in any of their bedrooms. And we just made sure that now today's different than when they're grown up nowadays, and it's a different generation today with social media. Right. So much of your identity is being found and discovered by who likes you and who doesn't like you, who follows you. Yeah. So we don't necessarily understand, to be honest with you, as parents, we don't necessarily understand that because these guys only grew up with the beginning of that. Some parents here, you got some real challenges there and you got to monitor what they're looking at and they're watching.
Yeah.
And Facebook, some of the things people put out there on social, here's what the Bible says. Oh, I'm getting fired up now. Oh. The Bible says, drink water from your own cistern. And what it's saying is don't be getting refreshed by what someone else is doing. Yeah. Find refreshing in what you're doing.
Yeah.
Don't let your life be defined by others.
And I would just add, you know, mum and dad, you are in control of this. You know, when you have a young person in your home, you are in control of this. And they'll try and turn it and make you feel like you're not, but you really are. When you give them a device, that's a big conversation. Yep. And then, you know, Laurie, our daughter-in-law's parents took their devices off them every night at like 7 p.m. at night. I think that's fantastic to have those kind of parameters too.
Oh, that is awesome. And it really is a rising thing that we still haven't even seen the full expression of it. So all those things help. I know one thing I learned growing up is no one can love me and no one can hurt me like my family can.
Yeah.
And the result is you can see some of the deepest resentments people will ever know, not from outside their family, but inside their family. So what would be the advice you would give to someone, maybe a parent who sees that their children, maybe there's two children in the family that have deep resentment between one another? How would you encourage those parents to help their children navigate that?
That's a deep question. Yeah, it is. And again, it's probably depending on their age as well, how old they are. I think for me, you know, it wouldn't have mattered how old they are. We love and respect each other. So that didn't mean that, you know, Josh and Sam would get into it and fight. And all kids fight. Gosh, they all do. It's all part of growing up. But what's the value in your home? We will love and respect. You might not like them, but you will talk well of them. And you will, you know, inside our family and outside our family. But I do think it can be a big issue that really needs to be addressed. You know, one thing we do now, and we kind of did it at Thanksgiving, we talk about things that we were grateful for, but now we have adult children with their own families. But what we do at birthdays now is we have started, I think you could do this even when your kids are little, and I kind of wish we did, but we, whoever's birthday it is, we all go around and talk about what we appreciate about that person. And, you know, Sam and Laurie are living in Texas now, but, you know, Alyssa just turned 30, and we FaceTime them in, and so they were part of singing happy birthday, but also everybody then, whether we're living in the same area or not, doesn't matter. That's the beauty of technology,
yes,
is that we all weigh in and talk about what we love about this person. I think that's great to start off a conversation, even with your young person, or, you know, we're all coming to the table and we're all going to bring something about this person. And because, you know what, when you have kids, you are giving them their best friends for life. No one will have their back like their siblings. They won't. And that's, I think, as parents, let's that be our responsibility to foster that the best way we can. And if there is an issue, well, let's talk about it, and let's, you know, bring someone in who can maybe give some perspective and help, because I think it's a big issue that needs to be resolved, because in adulthood, you want them to be friends for life.
Yeah. And not only that, you're setting them up to navigate difficult relationships in the future.
Yeah, true.
And if you don't teach them how to navigate relationship with your brother and sister, I mean, Josh has a nickname for Alyssa that isn't the nicest nickname in the world. And, you know, and it's all said in jest, Josh.
You want me to say it?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's the fire-breathing dragon is what she was.
Because Alyssa was the oldest one, and Alyssa would lay down rules, and Alyssa would always, to this day, Josh still jokes about it, but the truth is, that was a leadership moment for her. But if I ever felt like that, and for Josh, if I ever felt like he disrespected her, I go, listen to me, buddy. That is not allowed. And I remember sometimes Josh and Sam would fight, and thankfully, Sam worshipped the ground Josh walked on.
He still does.
And Josh genuinely loved his little brother. Sometimes brothers, they can annoy each other. And like, your friends are not my friends. Josh was also inclusive. But that doesn't mean they didn't fight at times. And there were some times when I'd see Josh hit Sam, I'd go, mate, if you touch him like that, I will hit you just as hard as you hit him. You will not disrespect him. You will not bully him. You will not do that.
Yeah.
It ain't happening. Yeah. There will be consequences. This is your brother, and he's being a jerk. He's being an idiot. And there was times when Sam deserved a good beating. Let me tell you, Sam was that annoying brother at times. He would do things that would annoy the fool out of people. But I even had to say to Sam, stop that. You know, you got it coming. Someone's going to give it to you one day harder than you'll ever be prepared for it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that know exactly what you're talking about with Sam.
Trust me, I know.
No, that is awesome. I guess parting question would be this for you guys. How would you define, maybe for Pastor Shannon and Pastor Steve, how would you define success for a parent? And I think a cool question for Josh and Alyssa in parting. What would you want your kids to say about you one day? So we'll give you time to think that one through. But for you guys, how would you define success as a parent?
Wow, that's a big question. I think maintaining a great relationship with them, regardless of where their life is up to. I think that's what Jesus calls us to, you know, love your neighbor as yourself, that unconditional love, to love someone even when they're not behaving like you'd want them to. Now, we would all hope and pray that our kids will be in church and they'll be serving God, but they might not be on that journey. But can you honestly say, I love you no matter what? And I think success isn't pinning my family up against someone else's and saying, my kids are better, Emma. It's not that. It's going, you know what? I can pick up the phone with any of them and have a fantastic conversation, even if they're not where they want to be. And I think that would be what I would say.
That's good.
That's awesome.
I think for me, what matters is I love the fact that my kids still like being with us. Mm. You know, yesterday we were flying home from Texas and Josh rang up and says, hey, Dad, what are you doing for dinner? Now I know he's looking for a free meal.
100%.
I know that. But I'm telling you, I love the fact, Brooke's going, no, that's not true. But honestly, I love the fact that our kids still want us in their world. And, you know, even with Sam and Laurie, when we were seeing them in Texas, you know, and I love the fact that we are their friends and we're their parents. But I love the fact, to me, if you want to say this is what life's all about, it's the family together in Jesus' name.
Man, thanks, Joe. I think I want my kids. Now that I have a daughter, I cry about everything, so. To say the same thing. Oh, man. That I would say, yeah, thanks. Thanks for clapping my crying. Good job, you pansy. I want my kids to say the same thing I'd say about my parents, and I want them to mean it. That they are my heroes, and that obviously I've seen firsthand, I know they're not perfect, but I know they're authentic. And I know that they have given their life to following Jesus, and I'm so thankful that they've continually said yes to Jesus and continually taken the high road and show me that this life is so much more than just living for ourselves. They're really my heroes. I remember in high school, one of my friends is going through a really rough time. His dad became abusive, and he lived with us for a year. Like, it wasn't even a hesitation for my parents. And those moments, I want Liv and our future kids to look at me and say, my mom and my dad, they're my heroes, and they gave everything to following Jesus and building. I want them to know I gave everything to building the church that is the hope. I mean, it's all about Jesus, and I want them to see Jesus through me, and I want them to remember that I'm tall, even though I'm 5'9".
And I'm just going to echo what he said, because I don't know that I can really top that, but I would want them exactly what Josh said, to know that, you know, everything is all about Jesus, and that we did family life well, like we have been exampled. So
that's awesome.
Yeah,
can we give a hand for their honesty tonight, church, and their example of doing family life so well?
Thanks for listening to the Wave Church podcast. If you made a decision today to follow Jesus, please go to wavechurch.com and click on I Made a Decision so we can help you on your way to know God in a deeper way. And if you want to visit one of our locations, the website can help you locate the campus near you, or you can live stream our services. Have a great day.